PlayStation's Home's open beta came out, but do people really understand what its function is? Plus, we review the rest of Strong Bad's cool game for attractive people. All that in your live calls and chat comments on the Bobby Blackwell Show week of December 14th, 2008. Bobby Blackwell Show, you're on the air.
Calling in to chime in about this, Matt. And
it's your fault, Doc Wolf. It's you guys who buy these dumb Katamari, Catalarm, that game.
Bobby Blackwell back at Dragon Con 2005.
I am here at Anime Weekend Atlanta 11. I'm here at the Best Buy in Alpharetta, Georgia, talking about the Xbox 360 launch.
DC Nate and everybody in chat's all going, we didn't buy into the hype. You did buy into the hype, you just didn't buy the system.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, it's Bobby Blackwell.
Oh my gosh, are we all ready for Spike TV tonight? We're going to all tune in to Spike TV? Maybe? Hello, everybody. And welcome to yet another edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on All Games Radio, welcome. Head on over to our chat room, chat.allgames.com. I'll be reading intelligent comments from chat about our show throughout the night. Not anyone else's show, just our show. A little bit later on, I'm going to be opening up our Skype line and our toll-free number for you to call in. Our Skype line is Bobby Blackwell Show. That is all one word. Or you can call us toll-free in North America, 1-866-880-0156. If you're listening to us in the podcast feed, blackwolf@allgames.com is my email address. So I wanted to start off. I was able to kind of go down my review stack. I've still got some to go through, like those shooters. I think I'm holding those off, those shooters that Activision sent me that I told you about last week. I hadn't played those yet. I did go through, and I actually can't talk about all of them yet, but I finished up the point-and-click adventure series that I've been playing on the PC, Strong Bad's Cool Game for Attractive People. I haven't talked about this in a couple months because I reviewed the first episode and then the second episode, and then I really didn't touch episodes 3 or 4 until yesterday. So yesterday actually was a big point-and-click day for me. Luckily, each game is only about 4 hours long on your first playthrough, so it was a day of playing 3 episodes back-to-back-to-back. The last one I can't tell you about, but I'm going to kind of give you just a little bit of an overview of what this is. If you haven't been listening to the show and don't know, Homestar Runner is actually based here in Atlanta. It's a webcomic, a Flash webcomic that's been around forever, it seems. They're very guarded with their property. They do a lot of jokes that are in the gaming industry, and you're in gaming for gamers and stuff. But they never really had a game, any kind of serious game. They did have an Atari 2600 game that was being worked on by the homebrew community. Paul Slocum, who's one of the top Atari 2600 homebrew programmers out there, was actually making a Final Fantasy style RPG called Homestar Runner RPG. It even had cutscenes with text. It had an overworld, have an inventory screen. It crammed a lot into that little 2600 cartridge. He got overwhelmed and left the project. And actually, they announced on this show in like one of our first big interviews ever, which I think is still like the most downloaded show I've ever done. I haven't done a better show in 3 years. They actually announced on my show that project got canceled. So I broke the news on that. I think you can find it on Wikipedia. They even mentioned me. Anyway, Strong Bad's Cool Game for Attractive People. This is Telltale Games coming in and saying, you know, you guys can still own everything. We just want to make the game for you. And so they have a point-and-click adventure game, much in the style of Sam & Max, which is Telltale's other big, big well-known franchise. They've also done the latest CSI game. And it's one of those point-and-click adventure games where you can't die. So it's all puzzle-solving. You don't have to worry about dying. It's like, you know, you have Elika with you in Prince of Persia, a game that I have not played yet, but I know other people have. Elika being the character that is basically your death screen. Yeah. So the first two games I had reviewed, I liked the first one, the first episode, Homestar Ruiner. And then the second episode I really didn't like as much, and it just didn't work for me. And you can actually listen back to our archives to see why I really didn't like the second one as much. But I've also seen that, you know, with these episodic games that Telltale does, you really got to look at them as a whole, because they're really, you know, supposed to be one story, you know, where you play through it, and you just play through it once a month in about 4-hour chunks. Telltale does episodic gaming right. Valve does not. So, and neither does Rockstar, for that matter. So, I finally sat down and I played the last three episodes. Episodes 3, 4, and 5, back to back to back. And if you're a fan of Homestar Runner, I think you will like this stuff as a whole. I think you'll like the entire series as a whole. If you're not, I'm not exactly sure you're going to really enjoy it, because it's the problem that I had with like the second episode actually does carry on to the later episodes, where there are things that you're going to be doing and you have absolutely no clue why you're doing them. They're integral to the story, you just haven't gotten to that part yet. It doesn't flow correctly. And it doesn't lead you into what you may need to do if you're having trouble to get stuck. You know, I mean, you'll have to find some esoteric item that you may not be able to see unless you get lucky and put your mouse over it. The biggest problems that I had when I was playing through it was I did not pick up an item way back when, and I didn't know that I needed that specific item. I knew I needed this guy to do something, but I didn't know what item I would need to get him to do it. It wasn't in my inventory, and I never saw it the last time I was in the room. That happened a couple times. So the specific episodes, episode 3 is called Baddest of the Bands, which basically I thought was going to be like Guitar Hero. It's nothing like Guitar Hero. There is no Guitar Hero minigame in it. Although in each Strong Bad game, there is like a fake Atari 2600 game in there, like very pixely and all that stuff. And actually, I really like the one they put in episode 3, which was it's a ripoff of Choplifter. So, and it was based on Limousine, which is their heavy metal band, which is actually a local band here in Atlanta called YOU. And then the Matt Chapman, who does all the voices except for Marzipan, he does the voices for Limousine, but it's actually a local band, actually plays all the Limousine stuff here. And basically, it's about needing to get the money to fix your fun machine, which is what they call the Atari 2600. They call it the fun machine. And he puts on a concert and then gets all the other people in the Homestar Runner world to enter their band. Everybody in Homestar Runner universe is in a band, believe it or not. So essentially, you have to get this Battle of the Bands together, and then it winds up that you have to enter as Strong Bad as a fourth band to win the rest of the money, because you only got half the money you needed to fix your fun machine. And then basically the object of the game is, first you got to get all these people to come join your Battle of the Bands, and then you have to win the Battle of the Bands. And it's kind of funny, they put in some of the rock stereotypes in there and the music stereotypes in there. So, you know, if you're a fan of the humor, you're going to definitely see it in there. But it's not a Guitar Hero thing, so don't expect it to be like Guitar Hero or Rock Band or anything like that. It's still very much a point-and-click adventure game. There wasn't really even that many mini-games other than the Choplifter game, which you don't get to play until the end, until after you finish the game and then the extended play is unlocked. One thing they did fix in episode 3 that was broken in episode 2 is that you do have the little metal detector thing to find hidden items, and they actually do now tell you when there's nothing left on the screen, which they didn't in episode 2. Also, they have in this episode where you can scream, like you have a microphone and, you know, Strong Bad screams rock out into it, or some other Limousine catchphrase, and then other boxes appear, and that's the collectibles, because there's a lot of collectibles in each game that you basically, once the game's over, you can still play it and try to find all these collectibles for no reward. Also, one thing to note, starting in episode 3, the Teen Girl Squad minigame is gone. So they only did the Teen Girl Squad minigame, where you choose the panels of this comic for the first two episodes. In the third episode, they actually have it where it's done in something, and it's part of the story, and it just plays it for you. You don't actually get to choose it yourself. And then in later episodes, I didn't see it at all. I didn't see the Teen Girl Squad in there at all. So at least it's trying to do different things. It's not trying to do the same thing each time. Episode 4 is based on Danger-esque 3, which in the Homestar Runner universe, it's a movie. It's a, you know, buddy cop thriller action movie. One guy, you know, one cop doesn't... Yeah. It's very stereotypical of a bad cop movie, where the cop, bad cop in the sense where he doesn't really follow the law and stuff. He's Danger-esque, and sometimes they're going to have to jump. this is actually done as a movie where at the beginning everybody's coming in and they're coming in to see the movie, the premiere of the movie, and all the characters in Homestar Runner are characters in the movie. And every once in a while they'll do things where they'll have like cuts and rewinds and fast forwards and all that stuff. So it's like you're watching a home movie, but you're actually acting in it. And this one actually brings in different locations, so you're not walking around the same world. You are, but they've, you know, purposely dressed it up, you know, with cardboard and sets and stuff like that. Very low budget movie. And it was kind of, you know, it was kind of interesting to see how they did that. And basically you do travel the world, which is all the same location. So it was a little bit better. It kept my interest a little bit more. It was not like the other ones. It was more of a mystery, movie mystery type of thing, because you're playing in a movie. The extended play in this was also a lot more interesting than any of the previous extended play, because in the previous ones, you could go around and collect more collectibles and that's it. In episode 4, all the extended play stuff is all bloopers and outtakes and director's commentary, where they, you know, there would be things where you could go in there and they would have like the flubbed lines and stuff like that, which are all faked. I mean, they're all part of the script, but that was the way that they presented the extended play to get you keep playing. So there was actually even more in episode 4 story-wise after the game was over, unlike in the previous games where there's just more collectibles and stuff to get earned, to be earned. And then episode 5, which is called 8-Bit is Enough. This is and I can say this from the previews. I really can't divulge anything. I'm under an embargo until midnight tonight. Because I think it's coming out on WiiWare tomorrow. It's coming out on Monday. This is the one where Trogdor shows up, and in the trailer they show Stinko Man. So it's basically, it's got all your video game jokes in it. I think I can say that. I hope I can say that. So all your video game references and all the stuff that I liked about the season one of Sam and Max episode, which was episode 5, which had all the video game references, all that kind of humor is in this last episode of Homestar Runner. So I can't really say much, you know, about what I think about this final episode yet, so I may be able to put that in next week. But overall, as a series, I give it a B for the entire series of 5 episodes, since now, starting tomorrow, all 5, the entire season is going to be out. I give it a B, but that's because I'm a fan of the Homestar Runner universe. I don't think that somebody who doesn't already like Homestar Runner is going to think that highly of the game. They're not going to enjoy it as much, because I don't think the puzzles are as well made and well thought out as the Sam and Max series, which is done by the same people, which is kind of why I kind of wonder why that's the case. But it just seems that the Sam and Max puzzles are a lot more thought out and a lot better executed than the ones in this game. Mako says, if Valve were taking the meaning of episodic gaming as smaller chunks of gameplay over shorter dev timescales, they're still technically doing it if you bear in mind the time difference between Half-Life 1 and Half-Life 2. If only we could ban Valve Time, which he then links to a wiki article on Valve Software about Valve Time. I only say that they do it wrong because they do an episode every like 2 years, and I think that for episodic gaming you need to do it every month or even every week, the way that American McGee's Grimm is doing it on GameTap. Grimm is also like 30 minutes long each episode. Okay, so another game that I've been playing, I'm going to kind of give a review on it, but even though it's kind of an early impressions, is a Wii game. I was actually playing a Wii game, and I actually like this Wii game, which is, you know, most people think I'm a Nintendo fanboy, so I like anything. Wario Land Shake It is a side-scrolling 2D platformer with Wario, the treasure hunter, and I like this. It's one of those Wii games that, I mean, I really like the Wii games that do this, where they'll use the functionality of the Wii remote but not overuse them. Another game that was like this was Super Paper Mario. Basically, you do control Wario Land Shake It as a traditional video game. You hold the controller sideways, you're not doing any pointing or anything like that. Now, one of the gameplay elements in it is that you are shaking the controller, which they want you to shake it violently up and down, but you don't have to. The Wii remote's more sensitive than that, so you're not going to be shaking too much if you do it right. But obviously the motion is there for those who want to get way too into it. The animation, I'm really impressed with the sprite animation. They basically took real, it's hand-drawn animation. Everything is hand-drawn in the game, which is something rare to see these days. And it really does look like a, you know, Wario's a little cartoon running across. They did a really great job of the animation in this while you're playing. It's not just in the cutscenes, although the cutscenes look good too. Speaking of those cutscenes, they do have fully full anime cutscenes without spoken dialogue. So you're like going along and there's music and sound effects and all this stuff, and then they start talking and you see the subtitles at the bottom. And they don't even do the Simlish that we're so used to seeing, you know, or, you know, the Animal Crossing, Animal Speak. It's just there. They're just like, it's, I'm like, okay, I'm waiting for them to start speaking. Oh, their mouth's moving. I guess I'm supposed to read what's at the bottom of the screen. And I don't mind reading. Reading is fundamental. It's also very fun. That's why we're all listening to radio right now. But at least, like, do something. I mean, if you're going to have full anime, okay, I guess here's the thing. If you're going to have something that is anime, I mean, it's an anime anime cartoon in these cutscenes, get the voice actors. I mean, Charles Martinet will do Wario. He'll do anything. He'll do bumpers for this show. He'll definitely lend his voice to Wario Land Shake It. They do have, like, kind of the, oh, yeah, you know, all the sound effects. But, you know, give him a dialogue. He can do dialogue in Wario's voice. But to me, it's a solid platformer. It doesn't, you know, force you to do strange, weird things with the Wii Remote. And the animation's quite good. And I think if this was shown at their E3 press conference, Nintendo's E3 press conference, people would not have been so upset at Nintendo. Because they were showing this at E3, and I saw it for like three or four minutes when we were in our meeting with Nintendo. And it would look great. You know, and this is the game that they probably should have shown to get people not to absolutely hate Nintendo's press conference. I think this would have gone over better than Chinatown Wars, which we still haven't seen anything else on. So, I mean, I haven't gone through it that much, but I probably won't talk about it again. So I'm actually going to give this one a B as well. So I'm giving out the B grades today. Funnydale says, I liked Wario Land Shake It as well. Only problem is the game gets repetitive quickly. And I can see that argument. That's why I want to point out, because I haven't gotten far enough for it to get repetitive. Basically, you go through the level. At the end, you rescue whoever you need to rescue, and then you need to get out of the level. You need to go basically backtrack back out, and you have a time limit to do so. And there's, like, you know, awards for getting out in such quick time. And there's little side missions that you can do, you know, bounce on these guys' heads and stuff. So I can see how it gets boring quickly. So it's probably a good rental. It's probably a much better rental than a purchase. Mako says, I'm tempted to buy Shake It. I miss the 2D platformer, and Super Paper Mario was a fantastic throwback to the times when I had a Sega Mega Drive. He's in UK. That's a Genesis for you people in the rest of the world. And Sonic 2 for company on many a cold and lonely evening. So something else that came out this week the open beta came out. We already talked a little bit about this. Home for the PlayStation 3. PlayStation Home finally went into open beta. Everybody could see it, and everybody could crash the servers. Obviously, the stress testing didn't work on Thursday because nobody could get in. They changed a little bit of the stuff, and they put in some of the game spaces, which is really what Home is about. And a lot of people are unimpressed by Home. I think what happened is that they were going into Home thinking it was going to be something that they never said it was going to be. Thing you got to realize about Home is, A, it's free. You're not paying for it, even though you can pay. And I would suggest you not pay. But Home is a vehicle to deliver advertising, to promote Sony products, be it Sony Pictures, Sony Games, Sony anything like that. That is its function. It's to get you in so they can put ads in front of you. And the social networking and all that stuff that everybody thinks Home is about is really just an excuse to get you in to a place where they can show you the ads. And there is no ad block for Home. That would be cool, though, if there was an ad block for Home. It would be very dead around. You'd have a lot of black screens. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, well, you know, Second Life is so much better than this. And I want people to stop comparing Home and Second Life because they are two completely different things. The only thing they have in common is that they use, like, 3D graphics. And you walk around in that. In Home, you don't create Jack. You basically walk around to places that Sony or their partners have created, and they deliver their content to you. In Second Life, all the content you're seeing, except for maybe the initial tutorial level, was built by other users from the ground up. They have scripting, they have, you know, building blocks, they built the geometry and all that stuff. You know, Linden Labs just provided the tract of land, and that's it. So in Home, everybody's like, you know, well, I thought I would be able to do this, and it was basically a lot of people trying to think up Home, you know, make up what they thought Home would be. And they're very disappointed that Home is actually exactly what Sony said it was going to be in the beginning, rather than what they made up in their mind. I do like the idea of the game spaces, and I think that's really where people are going to be coming back into Home for, is not to go dance in the dance area of the Central Plaza, which is dumb, and not to, you know, put bubble makers everywhere. And it's not to play bowling, and it's not to play pong. It's to come back in and see some of these game spaces. There are two game spaces up right now. One is for Uncharted Drake's Fortune, and one is for Far Cry 2. And what they've done is that they've put a little bit of the backstory in these game spaces. In the Far Cry 2 game space, there's actually in the guy's office. Basically, there's two areas. There's a train station, and then there's the guy's office. And in the office, there are actually dossiers all around, and you pick up the dossier, and it actually shows you like the backstory of the characters that are in there, pictures of them and stuff, and you go around and you can see all these. In the Uncharted, there's actually some doors that you can unlock, and the codes are out there. One door leads into the smuggler's den, where you can see like artifacts and stuff. One door leads to a film room, which actually has like a video of Uncharted playing, some of the like concept art and stuff like that. And then there's another room that has like artifacts, other artifacts from the good guy's side, I guess. I don't know. I've only played the demo of Uncharted, so I don't know like all the ins and outs of what the stories show and stuff. And there's codes that you have to find the code, and I don't know how you find the code. Maybe they're in the game. I don't know. I used Google, and they showed up. There's codes to get in there, and then there's, you know, there's actually a kind of a one screen puzzle game. An 8-bit game, kind of like what you'd see in Strong Bad's Cool Game for Attractive People. There's this like little 8-bit game of, you know, you're trying to get to the treasure, and you have to shoot the snakes and the people and jump on the vines and exploding barrels and everything. But very 8-bit looking. And that was in there, and that was kind of fun. I don't know if that yields any clothing or anything. So I think those, and, you know, those are for games that I don't really care about. You know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, when a game I do care about gets a game space, what they do in there. There are still some issues with like the coding of Home, one of which is that they instance the servers, but there's still so many people in that little area, and they all gravitate to one area. So if you want to full screen that video screen in the Uncharted room, you can't, because there's 30 people standing in front of there, so you can't actually get your icon, get over to it to where you can actually say video screen and then full screen the video screen. You actually have to have a clear line of sight to it, and you can't get that. That was kind of like my big hang-up on that. There's just they allow too many people in small rooms. That many people would probably be fine in a place that's huge like the Central Plaza, but when it's a very small room like the size of the room I'm broadcasting in right now, you really don't want to try to cram 30 people into this room. So I think the scaling could be a little better on that. You can buy things, and luckily I was in the closed beta, so I was able to pick up these things for free. But it's not really worth it to spend 50 cents on a hat, a cowboy hat, for your character. But people will buy it, and, you know, kudos to Sony for appealing to those people. I mean, there are lots of quote-unquote free MMOs out there on the PC, mostly from Asian regions, where they don't take a monthly fee, but they charge you for outfits and character slots and inventory slots, and they make a lot of money. So I hope you don't do that. And somebody asked me earlier, there's no goatees on the avatars in Home. And they asked me if I could buy a goatee for my avatar for 50 cents, would I? And right now I would say no, but maybe in a different day I'll just make that impulse purchase to buy it. It's not really 50 cents, 49 cents. Octocomo asked, yeah, what's the deal with the ball maker so random? And They just want to have some piece of inventory in there, something to test the inventory thing. VHSNXV says the dances are so boring. Basically, you can select a dance and you just like do that dance repeatedly. So that's all I was going to say on home. So two quick news stories that I wanted to come in, bring in, and then we'll take a break and take some calls. I have been a fan of this man for a while recently, maybe not as a kid because I was a fanboy and hated everything Lucasfilm Games did because Sierra was much better. But I've kind of felt bad for Tim Schafer. Tim Schafer, now with Double Fine Productions, he had a great game that he was going to be releasing on the Xbox. It was going to be a part of Microsoft Game Studios back in, you know, back when the Xbox launched. We're talking the original one, not the 360. Called Psychonauts. Most excellent game, Psychonauts. And he was getting it done, and they were close to getting done with it. And then Microsoft said, you know what? We don't want to do these kind of weird games like this and Oddworld. So, bye. See ya. And so Psychonauts was almost done, and it was left looking for a publisher, and Majesco finally picked it up, thinking it was going to get into the AAA game, the AAA game sales and all that stuff, and they picked up Psychonauts and Advent Rising and flopped. Both games, unfortunately, were sales flops. Advent Rising I can understand because it was buggy, but it had a great soundtrack from Tommy Tallarico. But Psychonauts didn't sell too well. And Majesco said, yep, we're going to go back into our budget games. See ya. See ya, AAA. We don't want to have you guys anymore. So Tim Schafer, as a follow-up kind of to Psychonauts, not a sequel, definitely not a sequel, Brutal Legend is a game about heavy metal and all that stuff. And it was with Vivendi Universal. It was actually with Sierra Entertainment, which I thought was hilarious because Sierra was the enemy. He worked for the enemy for Sierra. Back in my day, you know, yeah, there was Nintendo versus Sega. But back when I was a kid and had Fanboy Wars, my Fanboy Wars were Sierra versus Lucasfilm Games and the adventure games. You know, King's Quest was a lot better than Monkey Island. And that's kind of the way that I felt. I've grown up now and I've played them and they're all good. And you should too. But then Vivendi purchased Activision, and Activision took over and said, yeah, we don't see Brutal Legend as a property we can milk and exploit. So, bye. You need to go find a new publisher. Second game in a row, Tim Schafer has had almost done, and the publisher decides, no, we don't want you anymore. Well, thankfully, Electronic Arts to the rescue. On December 12th, Double Fine and EA announced that they have signed an exclusive publishing agreement that will bring the highly anticipated rock adventure Brutal Legend to gamers, headbangers, roadies, and rockers worldwide in the fall. So, the third-person action adventure game starring Jack Black in the role of roadie Eddie Riggs will come out in fall for the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3. Yay. I think that Spike TV thing tonight is supposed to have like another first look at it. Pen15 says Brutal Legend should be renamed Metalocalypse, which is a Cartoon Network, or Adult Swim, excuse me. Adult Swim is not Cartoon Network. They just share the same TV. It's an Adult Swim show about what if, like, the heavy metal lifestyle was actually real. It's kind of funny. It's good in 15-minute chunks. Thankfully, the episodes are only, like, 11 minutes long. Mako says, you hated Monkey Island on behalf of Guybrush Threepwood. I say you fight like a cow. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to insult you, duel you, Mako. Dark Tetsuya with a frowny face says, oh sure, they bought the rights to Brutal Legend, but they also canned my favorite franchise of their Need for Speed. And this was something I didn't put in the show notes. But yeah, apparently the rumor, I don't know if it's been confirmed yet, but the rumor earlier today was that the Need for Speed franchise is actually getting the axe. Which basically leads me to say, you know, seeing that get the axe, seeing, you know, Tabula Rasa shut down, and seeing, you know, like the Vancouver studio that EA was doing not happen now, and other games that, you know, other game studios that are closing their doors. Whoever said that video games were recession proof is an idiot, because video games are not recession proof. This is a direct result of the economy that we're in here, the world economy, but even in the U.S. it's very, very prevalent here. And video games are not recession-proof. Now, granted, World of Warcraft is now going to be charging $15 for you to change your appearance, and people are buying it. But that's an exception to the rule. Video games are not recession-proof. And speaking of the economy, let's talk about this. And this was actually Shadow Next Gen brought this up in chat, wanted me to talk about it. I usually don't talk about like sales numbers, but the November NPD numbers, which is the group that tracks most of the video game sales in the United States. Now, granted, they don't get all the stores. It's a sampling. I don't think Walmart is included in these sales data, for instance. And in November, get this, the Wii, the console, the Wii, the one that, you know, nobody here plays, pretty much, 2.04 million units sold in December alone. I think there was like 800,000 just on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. That's a lot. 2.04 million Wiis were sold in the month of November. The second best-selling, Nintendo DS, 1.57 million. Third best-selling, finally we get to the Xbox 360, which sold 836,000 consoles in the month of November. The PSP did 421,000 in the month of November. And then the PlayStation 3, 378,000 units compared to the others. And actually, also on the list, the PS2 still selling well. Persona 4 just came out, 206,000 units for the PS2. So the Wii, Nintendo is just owning people in terms of hardware sales. Now, the good news for Xbox 360 fanboys and Xbox like you, the 360 dominates in software sales. They have the 360 sold more in software in November than the Wii and the PS3 combined. So the 360 still dominates. I mean, Gears of War 2 sold 1.56 million. Call of Duty World at War sold 1.41 million. And then the third game, this is actually really interesting for me, Wii Play, with the remote, which that's probably why, it sold 796,000 units. Wii Play came out in January of 07, I believe. I believe it was January of 07. So this is like a year and a half old game. It's number three on the software sales charts. I understand it's because they bundle in a remote with it. But still, that's got to be some impressive marketing. Number four is actually Wii Fit because of the balance board. That sold 697,000. And then number five, Mario Kart Wii with the wheel, still doing well, 637,000. Then it goes through, and then there's a bunch of other games. I'm not going to read all 20. Apparently, World of Warcraft sold a lot too, but they don't track PC games on the NPD charts. But they did mention that Wrath of the Lich King sold 80 bajazillion copies in the first hour of release. Gangrew says, if third parties would have taken advantage of the drought on the Wii this year, they could have made a killing. And I will say that the top-rated third-party game on the Wii, according to this, or not top-rated, but the top-selling third-party game here on the Wii was actually at number 7, Guitar Hero World Tour for the Wii. And, I mean, that's always been the case with the Guitar Hero games, is that the Guitar Hero games are always, like, the top seller. The Wii is the top seller of the Guitar Hero games. And Pen15 says, Mario Kart Wii has passed the 10 million mark. And this is just, I'm reading the data from November. Like, this is just what they sold last month. Not overall sales. That'd be a different story. Pen15 says, 800,000, not very good numbers for a third year under $200 price point, in my opinion. Actually, I would say that 800,000 units sold in the month of November for the Xbox 360 is actually pretty good. That's a good month for them. The PS3 at only 378,000, that is probably not as good. But I think that 800, getting that many units sold in November is pretty good, especially since it's been out for a while. But there are people, you know, there are a lot of kids out there that want a Wii. In fact, I actually have somebody that I spoke with, somebody that I work with, and he was, you know, asking me, okay, what game system should I get? And I'm like, okay, you should get, you know, I basically asked him, okay, what do you like? Okay, you want this? You know, you're he's into music, so I'm like, okay, you're gonna want Rock Band 2. You're not gonna want Guitar Hero. And I basically said, okay, you know, you would like an Xbox 360. They're gonna have this for your kids and this for you and all that stuff. And he basically, his kids whined and complained until he changed it to a Wii. So he bought his kids a Wii for Christmas, and they don't listen to the show, so they don't know this. But he bought them a Wii because he was going to get a 360 until his kids complained. Because they didn't want a 360. They wanted a Wii. And his kids are like 9 and 11. Game Guru just points out that the Xbox 360 is doing well It's just Wii and DS are dominating like the PS2 to the consumer. I think the 360 is doing well. That's my opinion. So we're going to take a quick music break. You will actually be hearing this on the podcast feed because this is not like licensed game music. This is actually something free you can download on the internet. This is from Dr. Octorok, who is an 8-bit chiptune music maker. And he released an album this past week called 8-Bit Jesus, which is a Christmas album, all done in the style of 8-bit video games. Now, the thing about this that, you know, I was listening to it in the car, and so I didn't have, like, the names of the songs in front of me, but he actually literally does these songs in the style of the game, of that specific game. And he nails it on some of these. So I'm going to play two of these. One of them is a Silent Night, and the other one is Carol of the Bells. And they're a part. They're made in the style of two very popular 8-bit video games, and I'll tell you what they are afterwards. But I want to play them and see if you can guess what they are. And for those of you listening on the live stream, I know you can figure it out by doing what's on, but try to figure it out before I actually play them. You're listening to the Bobby Blackwell Show on All Games Radio, online at allgames.com.
You as well. Get down.
Face on the floor. I don't want to see your eyes.
We're hijacking the Bobby Blackwolf show.
Do it now. Get down. You down.
Shut
down
it.
Down. Now.
Down. We're taking it to a place we can have super and happy fun times. That's right.
You, swarthy looking guy, third row. Don't look at me again or I'm going to shoot you right in the face.
Come. It's fine.
He's looking at me.
No, he's not.
Looking at me. He's getting. That's it.
Oh, nice going. You missed
him. What do you want me to do? He was looking at me.
You missed him. Now we're going to die. Where'd it go?
I told you to sight the gun in, but I got to bring Marmite with us. What you needed Marmite for this for, I don't know.
Well, you know, it's a torture device.
Now we're going to die. Thank you.
Yeah, we're going to die. Bye, everyone. It's been nice knowing you. Bye.
Super happy fun time show here on allgames.com. Wanted to thank them for that. I'm playing that because Super Happy Fun Time Show, it's by Kropotkin and Hendrix and Bloodshot, and with special guest contributors GK128 and Digital Firefly. They just hit episode 50. They just turned 50 weeks old this week and celebrated with an hour and 40 minute long podcast. So check them out. They're on our website, Super Happy Fun Time Show. Also, I did want to kind of mention, kind of in this little segment of where we're promoting other things. If you're looking for some last minute gifts or whatever, and looking for like video games at good prices, why don't you try shop.allgames.com? We're really trying to push the shop over here at All Games, and you might actually get some good prices. And there's some great shipping deals on there too as well. I think it's free shipping in North America until the end of the year. So instead of going to Amazon, why don't you go to shop.allgames.com to buy video games? That'd be great. Now, that album, it's called 8-Bit Jesus. It's from Dr. Octorok. It was hit on all the sites. I'll find a link to it and put it in the show notes. But the first song was Silent Night, but it's actually Silent Night Man, as in K-N-I-G-H-T, Man. And that was in the style of Mega Man. They're both very short. And the second one, it kind of went right into it, was Carol of the Bells, but it was done in the style of Castlevania, Carol of the Belmonts. And everybody played nicely except for Pen15, who cheated, and I kicked him out of chat. And it felt good. So we're going to take your calls right now. I'm going to open up our phone lines and our Skype line. Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156. You can call in to talk about either anything we've been talking about tonight, or you can bring up your own topic as long as it's a part of the video gaming industry, or video gaming, or about games, or something like that. And we do have a call here, so I'm going to go ahead and take this. And unfortunately, Teach116 is not here to stop this from happening. So Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
This is the Great Pen15.
The Great Pen15. What is on your mind, Great Pen15?
Well, now that you're Mr. Big Shot TV host, you're going to have infinite money to buy games.
Right.
And my question is, do you prefer to play a game like go through every nook and cranny, or do you prefer to kind of have the experience, move on to the next one?
The latter. I prefer to have the experience and then move on.
Okay. Because the reason I ask is because the way I sort of play games is, even though I would consider myself a quote-unquote hardcore gamer, a lot of people are surprised when they go through the list of games that they bought just in the recent month, and I go, oh, I don't have any of those. I usually only buy maybe 3 or 4 games during the whole year, but I play the hell out of the game.
Right.
I play them to death, so I know every aspect of the game possible. That's why I'm big into fighting games, because it's sort of unlimited how much you can learn.
Right, and that's, that's the cheaper way of doing it, too. That helps a lot of budgets. If I did that, then I would have so much money right now, I wouldn't need to become a TV show host.
Yeah, and also, now with Gamefly, it's not that bad. But I realize that most reviews are from the perspective of these guys go from game to game to game, not from I got one game or two games this year, and I'm going to play them to death. And, for example, when somebody suggests that they should buy Mirror's Edge, well, that's obviously somebody who just goes from game to game.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody in their right mind would not recommend Mirror's Edge as far as one of the 4 games that you buy the whole year.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that perspective is the most valuable one. And that's actually how GameSpot used to seem to do it. Even though I'm sure they went from game to game, it always felt like they took into heavy consideration the replay value and how long you're actually going to be in the world, and how enjoyable it is to keep the world. let's say if it's a single player game.
Right, and it, I mean, a lot of sites that I've seen also, you know, they do talk about the replay value, but no, and unfortunately, it is not, a reviewer is incapable of sitting there and playing the game as if it was like the only one or two games that they played all year. Editors just don't let that to happen. Don't let that happen. So, you know, they've got to kind of guess on, you know, what they would consider in terms of replay value because they don't have the months and months to continue playing the game. And, you know, that's kind of what I'm seeing is that, you know, now that I'm getting review copies for whatever reason, I don't have as much time to play games as I would like because I've got to jump from game to game to try to get some of these reviews out. So, yeah?
I kind of understand that, but at the same time, it could easily be remedied by spreading out the games that people play to more people. Like in your situation, of course, you have to go from game to game because you do it solo. Mm-hmm. But IGN has a huge staff. And instead of having, like for example, when there was this guy for Midnight Club LA who said, yeah, I'm going to play and review it this weekend. Even if he played all 48 hours without sleeping and stopping, he would not have equaled the amount of time I put into it, and which was about 90 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bunch of stuff that is very sort of obvious to me.
Do you realize how many games they review, though?
Well, no, that's my point. They shouldn't do that. They should have a guy spend, like, at least 2 weeks with the game, so that way
with the amount of games that come out, they can't do that. They can't afford to pay all those people.
Well, you also have to realize there's a bunch of games that most gamers don't care about that are being reviewed and given time to.
And so you're saying that because you don't care about the game, they should not cover it?
No, I meant, like, you know, they still review children's games and stuff.
And
like
parents
that, like,
want to know if the game is good for their kids.
A parent is not going to IGN. A parent is
Are
going
you
to
sure?
Netflix.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
So you're saying that there's no parents that go to IGN?
Not.
You are wrong. You are wrong. I should kick you again.
Wait, what parent can't tell that, you know, whatever Spider-Man tie-in movie isn't a crappy game?
The Spider-Man Web of Shadows game I'm playing right now isn't half bad.
Well, according to all the reviews, it's very bad.
No, not Web of Shadows. You need to go relook the reviews for Web of Shadows. It's actually not all that bad. It's not perfectly great. It's also not a movie tie-in. But
yeah.
It more follows the comics. But it's not all that bad. And, you know, I mean, you'd be surprised. I mean, there are a lot of sites that will link to, like, GameSpot and IGN for the holiday reviews for the kids, for kids and stuff. And there are parents that I do know that say, you know, well, I read about this on IGN. You know, they'll come to me because in other areas where they know I play video games and they don't, and they'll say, well, I looked it up and I saw this on IGN when I was looking up the game and all this stuff. So,
well,
yes, they are out there, and IGN's getting page views off of parents looking up, you know, games for their kids.
Well, because everyone keeps saying that they use Metacritic. That's what I've always heard about. Oh, parents use Metacritic, not really gamers. And that sort of, like, flies in the face of that. Because
I
don't know many parents. So
yeah, see, I do. I know a lot of parents, and especially, like, newer parents and stuff. Like, you know, I've actually got some friends that are parents, but they're also gamers. So, I mean, but they do check for, like, the reviews of the children's games and stuff. And you know, when I think children's games, I think, you know, more of, like, even like the Reader Rabbits and stuff like that, that they'll look for reviews on before going getting on those. So, you know, I think that they should review Cars and Cars 2 and you know, all those Disney games and stuff because there's a market for those. And, you know, people will look up on the internet. People are getting more internet savvy and looking them up. They may not tell a pollster, oh, I go to IGN. They probably just type it into Google or something and just go to wherever the top hit is.
Well, Jennifer Sal from 1UP, she is a parent and has kids. And she always approaches games from the perspective of sort of more casual. And she got, you know, a lot of people upset when she gave, I think, Wii Music an A, which was by far the highest score. And a lot of people got upset with her, and I was like, that's the person who I want to review those games. I don't want hardcore, you know, Fallout 3 guy to review that game. I want him to review Fallout 3. And that's sort of my point, is that it should be kind of a separate, you know, entity. It shouldn't be, I mean, granted, I am speaking from a kind of selfish want of having a more educated, more deep review system. And that's what I feel like I'm not getting anymore.
Well, you can blame the economy for that. I mean, they've had to cut staff, revenues are down, people are leaving and creating giant bombs. And
well, as far as I know, no game site has ever had a separate, like, well, these are kind of more casual players reviewing games, and these are the hardcore guys. They've always had it. Hardcore guys do everything. And that seems wrong to me. That's why I'm saying I wish there were deeper reviews for the more hardcore titles, and I wish there were more casual reviews for the casual games. I don't think Wii Fit should be judged on the same level as Gears of War, but that's what people are doing. And a lot of these games that, like, most of the listeners to your show are listening to absolutely don't care about. Mm-hmm. But there are people who do care about it, like you said. And, I mean, look at me. I was under the assumption that most parents use Metacritic and game rankings and all that stuff.
Yes, and I've never seen a parent. I mean, I see parents, and VXJSNXV is even, you know, hammering me in chat on this, saying that, you know, I'm sitting here talking about how parents don't know what these are. Some do, and the ones that don't, either find it, you know, like, because I know the AJC, which is the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, AJC.com, they do, like, the game stuff, and they'll link to, you know, an IGN or a GameSpot sometimes to you know, their holiday guide for tips for parents to buy things for their kids. So they'll find it from the mainstream outlets like that. So I don't, unless that mainstream outlet links to Metacritic or Game Rankings or whatever, I could, you know, the parents that I know kind of what GameSpot and IGN are, but they don't know what game, they wouldn't know what Metacritic is.
And I must admit, when you did say that parents check IGN and GameSpot, like, looking back, whenever I Google a game, IGN or GameSpot is usually one of the first two choices, so it kind of makes sense that those would be the first choices that they go to. Not because they know IGN or GameSpot, just because that's the first thing that Google pops out.
Right. And then they'll say, okay, well, this is good, and they may bookmark that site. You know, people who have like 8 million bookmarks and don't put them in folders and stuff and have to scroll through them.
I personally don't think it's an unrealistic thing to ask if the hardcore guys only do hardcore games. But if they do all the games, of course it's an impossible thing to do. Like, I would love to hear a guy who only reviews movie games. He'll probably eventually start liking the movie games because that's all he knows.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, you know, the guy who does the best game of the year, you know, and then has to do a crappy movie game, which to him is crappy compared to the super high-budget hardcore title.
Yeah.
Like, my brother loves Spider-Man 2, and I was like, I don't want to go anywhere near that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for your call, man.
All right,
appreciate
great show, Blackwell.
Thank you. So that's actually that's all the time we have for calls this time. Pen 15 took up all the calls this time. Sorry, guys. Coming up next here on All Games Radio is Orange Lounge Radio. Three people out in Sacramento that have been doing this much longer than I am, and they're much more famous than I am. But they're not getting their own television show. So I'm trying to call them, see what's up with them. Sacramento, are you guys there?
We're here, Bobby. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Not too bad. Excited to do battle with the VGAs tonight.
Yes.
But, you know.
Yeah, who cares?
As I've been telling people on Twitter, just tape it, TiVo it, so you can fast forward through all the dumb stuff, and then you can just listen to us instead, and then watch the whole VGAs in about 10 minutes later.
Yeah. I mean, I have to go up against TV shows all the time. Everybody asks me, why are you going up against 24, or why are you going up against the Oscars and stuff? So you'll be fine.
I don't really see it as competing against things either, because you know, I think our audience is our audience, and they're going to come out for the show. You know, for most cases, it's going to take something pretty big to take them away. And you know, if not, there's always the podcast. You know, and although I think live radio is definitely where our niche is, you know, people are still going to check out the podcast later.
Yep.
Hopefully. Yep. Hopefully I don't sound too egotistical there, but I think just, you know, we're very fortunate where our audience has been extremely supportive of our show, and I'm so thankful for it.
Yeah. And most people are saying screw the VGAs anyway.
Exactly. I mean, you can read the results online probably already.
There's more quality programming here.
Who really gives, crap about the results? I want to kind of see the trailers that they're going to show, like how they have all these exclusive trailers and stuff, although I'm sure all that will be like on the internet.
It'll be on
tomorrow.
The internet in
it'll
5
be on,
minutes.
It'll be on game trailers after the show in high def.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's all I really wanted to see, but I wasn't going to actually watch the show for it. I mean, Jack Black's kind of funny. And, you know, I don't know. To me, it's just like the MTV Music Awards, you know, something like that, where they waste a lot of your time with stuff, and really all the stuff you want to see, you know, you can probably see on highlight clips later on.
But 50 Cent is performing. Come on.
Oh, my mistake. Then I need to quit the show right now. I got to go watch that.
That's something that I could care less about.
I hope he's performing scenes from his upcoming game, Blood in the Sand. That game looks amazing.
And then Soulja Boy's getting his own game, too.
But, you know, I don't even get excited about the Oscars anymore. And, you know, as a gay guy, it's supposed to be like our Super Bowl or whatever, I think I read somewhere. And I'm just, whatever. You know, because, well, A, it's on Sundays. But it used to be on Mondays. For a long time, it was on Mondays. So, you know, I could do both the show and watch the Oscars if I wanted to. But, you know, anything, it's just this big bloated 3.5-hour mess of crap. And although it's something everybody talks about the next day, in this day and age, anything big that happens ends up on the internet, on YouTube, within 5 minutes after the show anyway. So, you know, if Angelina Jolie's making out with her brother or whatever, that's going to be on YouTube in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I can watch the clips. We live in a very, very clip package society,
yeah.
I guess you could say. So, kind of interesting. How's your gaming week been, Bobby?
It's been there.
I missed the first part of your show tonight, so I didn't get to hear all the games you've been playing.
I finally finished all the Strong Bads, which spent...
How'd you like it?
I wound up giving it a B overall, but it's only because I'm kind of know the Homestar Runner universe, and I don't think that somebody who doesn't really know the Homestar Runner universe is going to enjoy it as much as I did.
Gotcha.
Because it's not solid enough on its own. Like, the Sam & Max games I consider solid enough on their own.
I've had little desire to actually try this Strong Bad stuff because, you know, like you said, I'm not really familiar with the universe. Sam & Max, though, I don't know why I haven't played it yet, because I love the original PC game. And why I haven't touched this thing in like two seasons yet is beyond me, but someday.
It's coming out on the Wii soon.
Sorry.
It's coming out on the Wii soon, yeah.
Yeah, but I'd rather play it on PC anyways. I mean, it's just looks better.
Strong Bad right now is on my list of February games, you know, because February is usually a slow period, although it looks like 2009 might be a bit of an exception with some of the, you know, upcoming games, especially like March, and, you know, we have a few things in January, but right now it's kind of set to be played in that period where we don't get a lot of other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, at least now the entire season set will be around, at least on the PC, so you won't have to get each one individually.
No, well, I was definitely going to play it on the PC anyway, because if you've listened to the show, you know I feel pretty strongly about the lack of support for ease of storage on the Wii.
Well, that, and it's just like, you know, when I even played Sam & Max, you know, it was point-and-click adventure games. I would feel wrong playing it any other way.
Right. Well, I mean, at least with the Wii versions, they do the point-and-click, but it's with the Wii remote rather than with the mouse.
And I want to know where my Monkey Island, you know, episodic game is. That's what I want.
I think LucasArts still owns that one, don't they?
I don't know. They've done a few different games, and they're actually pretty good. It's just I wish they'd make more.
Yeah, I think what it is like Sam & Max was owned by not LucasArts, and so or like it went back to the original owners, whereas Monkey Island has always been like a LucasArts property, and they've decided that adventure games are dead. And we're never making another adventure game.
Sad.
Yeah. So Telltale's picking up the slack so far.
Yeah, the Telltale's been doing a great job. So good for them.
So what's coming up tonight?
Tonight's episode of Orange Lounge Radio, we're going to talk about a lot of interesting kind of rumors going around out there, like a Rez sequel. You know, we love Rez at Orange Lounge Radio, as a lot of people do. It looks like a Rez sequel could be happening. Also, a very... near and dear to my heart, Commodore 64 series, set to make a reappearance on the Nintendo DS. There's screenshots out there and everything, and sounds pretty amazing.
Which one? Which one?
Just how it's come full circle. The Great Gianna Sisters.
That's right. I remember that.
If you can believe it, because remember, this was the game that ruffled Nintendo's feathers.
It did.
Because it was very, very, very similar to Mario Brothers. In fact, if you play just the first 5 seconds of Gianna Sisters, it feels like you're playing World 1-1. Although, if you play a little further into the game, you really start to see some of the differences. The thing that made Gianna Sisters really stand out, though, I mean, the game itself was kind of meh. I mean, it hasn't aged well. But the soundtrack is phenomenal. And I believe I read they got the guy to come back and do remixes of the original music for the Nintendo DS. So that is going to be pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. It's amazing. You know, Hitstone's in our chat saying, you know, he thought Nintendo sued this game out of existence. I guess not.
They might have sued the game out of existence at the time, but you know, it's been however many years. Who would have thought that Sega would be making games on Nintendo's console all these years later? Stranger things have happened.
Who thought we'd ever actually get to see Mario and Sonic fight?
Exactly. Or the Triforce that made the F-Zero game a couple years ago, if you remember that.
Yeah. So. Yeah. One of the best games on the GameCube was that F-Zero game.
Probably my favorite game on the GameCube, the one that still gets the most play today, would be the F-Zero game.
And I will say also, with F-Zero GX, which is what it was called, with the component cables, and especially like if you have a Wii that's hooked up by a component, I was always saying that F-Zero GX was the most beautiful 480p progressive scan widescreen game of that generation. It looked better than any Xbox game or any PS2 game that did progressive scan. It wasn't true. Wasn't true high def.
It looks better than a lot of Wii games.
Yeah.
If you own a Wii and you haven't played F-Zero GX, you're missing out. It's probably one of the best, because you're right. Your Wii is already hooked up, probably. You know, if you're a TV audio video junkie, you probably already have your Wii hooked up in 480p on your high def TV. You've got to go back and play F-Zero GX if this is the case. It's great.
And the reason it's like that is because they didn't overdo the graphics. They optimized it for speed. It's full 60 frames a second at 480p widescreen, and it's beautiful. It's not realistic. It's like Speed Racer,
but it's F-Zero. It's supposed to be, you know. And if you play in multiplayer, they really cut corners to make multiplayer work, but you don't notice. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're going so fast. You notice, but it's going so fast, and you're so into the multiplayer, you just kind of overlook it. And that's, you know, that's the best way to cut corners, in my opinion. I do hope that – I think an F-Zero game for the Wii, an actual one, is inevitable at some point. I hope that's the secret project that the Excite Truck team is working on that we heard from a few weeks back. We heard
I hope it's Excite Truck, too. Screw your F-Zero.
Well, you know, yeah, I do and I don't hope it's F-Zero, because, you know, if it's not the same developer, it's going to go in a different direction, but at the same time, you know, I'll take what I can get.
Excite Truck controlled really well, so.
It did. Yeah. I liked Excite Truck.
See, look, in our own chat room on the Orange Lounge chat, which we're watching just before the show, Alpha Cananagram, thank you, Sky, for letting me know about this game, because I got it a month or so ago. Haven't played it much, but it's great. It is great. And you could probably get it really cheap, especially used.
And you can get more suggestions like this, orangeloungeradio.com. Have a good show, guys.
You got it. Thank you, Bobby.
So that's it for us. We're going to be heading out for this week. The VGAs are starting. We will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We are not taking any kind of break or any hiatus during the holidays. We're still going to be here each and every Sunday night for you. All Games Radio, allgames.com. Catch us live. Interact with the show directly. Leave us a voicemail or a bumper for use in our show on our Skype line, Bobby Blackwell Show. Email me, blackwolf@allgames.com, or you can join our official forums and take part in our community. But I would not be able to make the live show work without the help of our wonderful chatters, ChrisVille1724, DCNate, GK128, Hendrix, the Rob D, Burning Paper Sun, Channel Z, D5T, ESWAT, Footy Monster, Funnydale, Kitsune, Mako, Maximilian, Megatens Liar, Octocamo, Stone Raider, THK, Tigerclaw, Toshin, Wylan, Actef, Ake Ripper, Alpha Box, Alpha Gananagram, Altitude, Amazetsuma, Ash Fox, Binary667, Bloodshot Robot, Burr, Cheeseburger, D5T, Dark Tetsuya, the Blue Guy, Derek H, DJ Dark Knight, Fang, Game Guru, Grave, Havoc978, Hecht, Hey Jude, Jillio, JP the Prodigy, Justin Sane, Kazan, Kulex, Melted General, Misty, Necromoss, Nextil, Nick Ferg, Nutman, OSU Fan, Outrage, Pen15, whose gamertag is Raging Ninja, and he's going to get kicked again. I don't know why, but I'll kick him again. Punchy, Raising Freak 92, Ranma, Shadow Next Gen, SSJ100, Matt, Stalin 8, Lennon, Subzy, TDB30, TM9FA, True, VXJSNXV, What Up G, Wilcon, Hitstun, and Zappy. So that's it for me, and we'll be back next week. Don't get too wrapped up in the VGAs now. Kind of. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed on tonight's broadcast are not necessarily the views and opinions of All Games Productions. This file may be freely distributed provided the original content is unedited and proper attribution is retained. For more information about All Games programming, go to www.allgames.com.
This week we learned that Microsoft knew about the disc scratching issue in the 360 before launch. Plus we asked what game came out this holiday season that you just didn't have the time to play. All that in your live calls and chat comments on the Bobby Blackwell Show week of December 21st, 2008. Bobby Blackwell Show, you're on the air.
Calling in to chime in about this, Matt. And
it's your fault, Doc Wolf. It's you guys who buy these dumb Katamari, that game.
Bobby Blackwell back at Dragon Con 2005.
I am here at Anime Weekend Atlanta 11. I'm here at the Best Buy in Alpharetta, Georgia, talking about the Xbox 360 launch.
DC Nate and everybody in chat's all going, we didn't buy into the hype. You did buy into the hype, you just didn't buy the system.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, it's Bobby Blackwell.
I know all you are like saying that it's snowing out. It's like it's been 70 and nice out, and I don't know what you guys are talking about with this snow thing. Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry as well as reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you are joining us here live on All Games Radio, I want to welcome you. Head on over to our chat room, chat.allgames.com. I'll be reading intelligent comments from chat throughout the night. A little bit later on, I am going to be opening up our phone lines for you. Our Skype line is Bobby Blackwell Show. That's all one word. Or you can call us toll-free in North America, 1-866-880-0156. Or you can email me, blackwolf@allgames.com, and you might hear your email read on the air. So it's been kind of a light news week. I mean, there's been some stories that have come around. But the one that I wanted to talk about and spend a little bit of time on was the revelation that Microsoft knew about problems with their console, which I don't know why this is news, because I knew that they didn't know that much about, or I could tell that they probably knew that there were these problems. But finally, we have proof of this. So the Seattle Post-Intelligencer blew the lid off this story. They reported that a document unsealed in a lawsuit last week suggests that Microsoft employees knew before putting the Xbox 360 on the market in November 2005 that the video game console could damage game discs. Several ongoing lawsuits charge that the 360 is defectively designed because tilting or swiveling the game console can scratch game discs playing inside. You know, and I guess I'm going to stop right here because I you know, it sucks that this has happened. I mean, there are problems with scratching discs. However, saying that it's defective because you can't treat the Xbox 360 as a portable gaming system, I mean, there's kind of a reason that, like, the DS is all solid state, and the PSP, they have, like, that caddy. And it's because they're portable systems. So, but anyway, plaintiffs in a July 2007 case filed in U.S. District Court in Seattle are seeking class action status on behalf of all of those who purchased Xbox 360s. Most of the declarations are sealed, but a newly unsealed motion seeking class status quotes from the sealed declarations of Microsoft employees. So it quotes from Hiro Umino. I should have read that before reading it out loud. A Microsoft program manager said in a declaration, quote, "This is information that we had as a team, optical disk drive team, knew about when we first discovered the problem in October of 2005. When we got a first report of disk movement, we knew this is what was causing the problem," unquote. Shortly after the launch, according to the motion, Microsoft sent a team of engineers to stores around the country to investigate complaints that the 360 was routinely scratching disks during demonstrations. They determined that if the console was tilted, disks inside became unchucked and collided with the drive's optical pickup unit, leading to deep circular gouges on the disks. Because of the complaints, Microsoft considered three possibilities to fix the problem, but they rejected all of them. So, possibility number one would have increased the magnetic field of the disk holder, but it was dismissed because it would have interfered with the disk opening and closing mechanism. Another solution number two was slowing the speed at which the disk was rotated. That was rejected because it would have increased the time required for a game to load. And a third solution would be to install small bumpers. And this was too expensive. It would have cost between $35 million and $75 million. Now, some people have I read somewhere, and it's not in this article, but it was basically 50 cents per unit is what somebody kind of said that came out to. And that's why they're all upset that Microsoft didn't want to spend the extra 50 cents. So I don't have card numbers on that, but that's what some people on the internets are saying. so we all know it's true. Eventually, Microsoft did institute an Xbox 360 disk replacement program that sends out new disks to customers if their disks are damaged for any reason. The program only applies to Microsoft titles and costs $20 per disk. There was also warnings in the manual and on the drive tray. You actually have to peel off the sticker that says "Don't move your console." You know, but then again, you know, some people are like, you know, well, what happens if, you know, I live in California and I'm playing a game and there's an earthquake and my disc scratches? So more than 55,000 customers have complained about broken discs as of April 30th of this year, 2008, according to a Microsoft employee quoted in the motion, which is a very small number. But from what I'm reading around is that, you know, the 55,000, that's just the number of people who have had a Microsoft disk scratch and have actually reported the problem to Microsoft. That doesn't count the people that have had disks scratched and never reported it. Like, I've actually had a disk scratch. I don't think it was this exact problem, but I've had a disk scratch when, you know, it, unfortunately, it was Oblivion, and my girlfriend was addicted to Oblivion, so she went out and bought it again. She found a used copy and bought Oblivion. So we've bought Oblivion, like, several times in this house. We never reported it to Microsoft, so I'm not one of those 55,000. There was a statement released from Microsoft on this, and they say, in quote, Xbox 360 is designed so that it will not damage a game disc as long as the console is not moved while the disc is spinning. Too much movement of any game console, not just Xbox 360, can cause scratches on a disc. That's why we put a warning on the face of the disc tray, which the user has to physically remove before the initial use of the system. We also have warnings posted online and in hard copy instruction manuals. While we have had some users contact us with concerns about scratch discs, it is less than one half of the 1% of the total Xbox 360 user base, unquote. So I'm going to look in chat. I want to see if anybody in chat has had a disc scratched and never reported it, or if they've had one and have reported it and participated in this Microsoft program. Tiger Claw says it's a conspiracy. They knew about the disc scratches and hid it from the public. DC Nate asks, 360 defective, is this a rerun of the Bobby Blackwell Show? What Up G does say that according to people like Dean Takahashi, who was, I think he's still with the San Francisco Chronicle. I don't know if he left them or not. I can't remember. He said that Microsoft did know about the Red Ring issue, and I wouldn't be surprised if they did actually know about the problems before they released it, and Microsoft was just trying to get out the door first. And yeah, that hurt a lot of customers. I mean, probably everybody here has been affected by Microsoft's rush to market. Prowler 37 says, Microsoft's be first to launch mentality is the reason why it's beating Sony. This only proves that quality doesn't matter. Being first to launch is the only thing that matters. Tell that to the Dreamcast, because it was first to launch. Tiger Claw says, speaking of opening and closing, my 360 has trouble ejecting the tray. Anyone has this problem too? Yes, I do. He continues saying, I have to tap the tray in order for it to come out. That is exactly what my spare 360 back here does. And I'm going to ask Tiger Claw if you also get, if when your disc kind of slows down, does it like make kind of a, like little noise, like a grinding noise? Because if that happens, then you've got the exact same issue that I do. And I'll tell you in a little bit what I may be able to do for you, or at least show you, or tell you about. Anyway, stay tuned. I'm going to read the rest of the chat before I go into that. DR4EV says, remember when they told you to boil 360 demo discs in order to play them from OXM? And I think that was just because of the printer that they used. They used a cheaper printer for those OXM discs, a cheaper press to make those discs, like physically make the discs, than with regular games. Shadow Next Gen says, no one mentions that Sony did this with the PS2, though. That's why I always bring up the fact that there was actually a class action lawsuit that Sony settled over the disc read error issue in the PS2. And tons of people were affected. Now, at the time when I was bringing this up, I would say, you know, that the PS2 had probably as much of a failure rate, if not more, than the 360 Red Ring of Death at the time, which was, you know, 2 years ago or whatever when we were talking about this. But the thing was, back in 2001, 2002, blogs and podcasts and stuff, we weren't around. So you didn't hear about all the problems people were having with their PS2s because the internet wasn't really as far out there. You just heard it from your friends. And a lot of people were like, well, my PS2 didn't break. You know, mine has. I'm on my like fourth PS2. And it's, you know, a lot of it's because of this disc read error or whatever, what the class action lawsuit was, the settlement was. But now I actually do believe that the 360's Red Ring of Death have actually surpassed the PS2. Daggerclaw says, if you mean grinding noise and something scratching the disc, then no, the disc's read normal. It just gets stuck when trying to eject. It gets stuck even when no disc is in the drive. And this is going to be a plug. I actually didn't plug this last week on the episode, which is actually on the podcast feed, the one you just heard. The show that I'm going to be doing, Friday Night Gaming, one of the segments, and I'm actually going to be talking about them in the next story, is going to be, we're going to be, you know, opening up consoles, showing the hardware, and repairing them. And my Xbox 360 that is having trouble with the drive opening and all that stuff, that's going to be the first one we repair. So what we'll be doing on the first episode on January 9th of Friday Night Gaming is we're going to take my Xbox 360 apart, and they say it's a 10-minute fix. So they're actually going to fix my drive tray because I'm having the exact same problem that Tiger Claw is having. And they're going to show exactly how they fix my problem and repair my console live on the air. So fnglive.net is where you're going to see that. It's going to be a new internet television show done by me. We're also going to do an audio podcast of it as well. And if there's time, I may go more into that. But I pretty much spent 10, 15 minutes talking about it 2 weeks ago. Shadow Next Gen says, I worked in retail back at the PS2 time and said we had a lot of people return PS2s to the point where Sony gave us specific guidelines to follow in returns or they would not take back the system. Hitstun says, the first three Dreamcasts I tried to buy from Funko Land and GameStop would not read discs, and the fourth lid sensor bugs out, and one I had to mod shut. And I actually, you know, I've been talking to the people at the repair shop, and they repair Dreamcasts, and they do say that it's the laser and the controller ports are the two most common repairs that they have to do on a Dreamcast. Prowler37 says, I have a launch Xbox, and it still works. The first Xbox was a quality machine. It's a shame Microsoft couldn't repeat that. Tell that to the people with the Thompson drive. However, to back you up, I have a launch Xbox, and I did have a Thompson drive. Thompson being the maker of the DVD tray or whatever, I think. I don't remember. But I have a Thompson drive, and mine still works perfectly to this day. And that was the version of the original Xbox that a lot of people had problems with, was the one with the Thompson drive. Funnydale says, the first Xbox was a PC in a custom box. That they're all computers. They all have video cards. They all have CPUs. I mean, they're all computers. Kind of, that's kind of a weird thing to see. I've heard that, you know, oh, it's just a PC in a box, you know, but it's basically, I mean, it's kind of hard to create a console that's not built in the same manner that a PC is built. You've got your CPU, you've got your memory, you've got your GPU. Nowadays, you know, all the consoles have their GPU created by either NVIDIA or ATI, which do make PC cards. You know, they're all laid out kind of in the same way that you could build a PC. I mean, hell, you know, the Nintendo Entertainment System was built in kind of the same way. It had CPU and GPU and audio. Yeah. Butchikawa asking about the Friday Night Gaming. Are these fixes they're going to do something we can all do at home? What they're going to be doing, basically, and here I go, I'm going to be talking about Friday Night Gaming. I apologize to you who don't care about this, but this is actually, I'm really excited about it. What CC Gaming, which is ccgamingonline.com, that's where they are, they are going to be doing, they're going to be, when they can do a fix on the show, it's going to be, they're going to talk through the entire process. We're actually going to have a camera very close up on what they're doing, so we're going to try to make it really clear as to what they're doing. And they do say that they aren't going to hide any of the steps. There may be a few things that they're going to consider being a trade secret. And we'll do the TV switch or something where, you know, kind of like how on Food Network or whatever, when they put a cake in the oven and then they're like, oh, but, you know, through the magic of television, we're going to bring out the finished cake. But mostly they're going to say, this is how we fix the problem. And they'll show you exactly what you can do and void your warranty because they realize they can't fix everybody's console. So, you know, if they're going to do this, and they actually are considering actually putting up stuff on their website with step-by-step instructions of how they fix a lot of these common issues with, like, pictures and even video and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, if you have the right tools, you probably would be able to follow along and do these fixes at home. Tire Law says, too bad Nintendo couldn't fix the problem with the NES when loading the cartridge when the game doesn't start. And you blow on the cartridge and hope it works. That is actually the most common fix for the NES, and that's going to be one of the other fixes we're going to do live on the show on FNG, is replacing the 72-pin connector. And actually, I think they've even figured out a way to actually fix the existing connector rather than replacing it outright, I think. I don't know. I don't know if I want to give away that trade secret of theirs or not. So I want to go ahead and talk a little bit about CC Gaming. This is I don't have a source for this news story yet because I don't think it's actually gotten out there yet, so I'm actually breaking news on this. But it's about CC Gaming because I was talking to them this week. I've been going back and forth to the computer arena here in Roswell, Georgia, where I'm trying to set up and get a bunch of hardware and stuff, getting ready for the Friday Night Gaming launch. And I was talking to them, and they said, you know, we have an announcement we can make about how they fixed 127,000 PlayStation 3s in one day. And that's actually how we wanted the headline to look. CC Gaming fixes 127,000 PS3s in one day. So essentially what's going on is that they have the owner, Glenn, has a PS3 at home. And it's a 60 gig. It's one of the original ones, the 60 gig, fully backwards compatible, non-GIMPed PS3. And he put in a PS2 game into it recently, and it kind of flashed and went dark. And he couldn't play the PS2 game. He puts a Blu-ray movie in, works fine. Puts a DVD movie in, works great. Puts a PS1 game in, works great. But he couldn't get the PS2 game to work. And remember, he has the Emotion Engine. He's got the hardware backwards compatibility. And this same week, about 5 or 6 PS3s came into his shop with the exact same issue. And so they were playing around with it, and they brought his PS3 into the shop and plugged it in, and the PS2 game worked in the shop. So they're like, oh, great, you fixed it. You know, whatever you did fixed it. So they took it home, put it back on his TV, put the PS2 game in, and it didn't work. And essentially the difference was, they found out, was the HDMI cable, because he's using HDMI at home and they were using just regular composite cables in the shop on their test TV. And when CC Gaming does anything like this, any kind of investigation into things like this, they always try to stay in contact with the hardware manufacturers. And apparently they sent all of their findings and all their research and huge documents to Sony, and apparently received a call from Sony Computer Entertainment America saying, you know, thanks to your work and your research, our engineers have actually found the problem, and it was actually a software problem in the latest update. And now I did check, and my 60 gigabyte PS3 actually works fine. It plays PS2 games just fine. So it's not all of them, but apparently Sony told him that there were probably 127,000 units that were experiencing this problem with their PS3. And because of CC Gaming's efforts, they are going to be able to put in the next firmware update a fix for this problem. Because apparently it was working before, and then the latest firmware update kind of undid something or messed something up. So, now, like I said, I have no link or any corroboration on this, but apparently, from what I'm being told, in the next patch notes, so if you look in the next patch notes for the PS3, the firmware, whenever that's going to be, look to see if CC Gaming's mentioned in there, because they were told they were going to get kind of a thank you from Sony in the patch notes. So, these are kind of the guys. Those are the guys that we're going to be working with every week on Friday Night Gaming. They've solved several issues, and they're able to repair lots of things. They have not conquered the Red Ring of Death yet. They can bring your machine back from a Red Ring of Death, but there's no guarantee that it won't Red Ring again. But they have conquered a lot of issues like that, so they're very knowledgeable, and I'm very excited to have Glenn and his entire team as a part of Friday Night Gaming. GZ, DR4EV says, hey, Black Wolf, remember when the PlayStation 1 failed and you had to turn it upside down in order to play the games? I don't have to remember that. That's actually what I have to do with my PlayStation 1. It goes upside down. There's no remembering of that. That's what I have to do. Tigerhaw says, if only Sony would get off their ass and release a firmware update that adds PS2 support, I'm assuming, for the PS3s that don't have the software in it to be able to do the backwards compatibility. That would be nice, because there's a lot of PS2 games out there still. And the PS3 is a great way for somebody who maybe didn't get a PS2 to experience those games. And, I mean, hell, Persona 4 came out this month. Still out for the PS2. Just a PS2 game. And, of course, God of War 2 being the biggest PS2 game of this year, I believe. Prowler37 says, I bought a 3DO at launch. That was expensive. I agree. I'm sorry. I actually recently got a 3DO myself, and it was still expensive, even though I bought it recently. Game Guru says, sad to say most people would rather play PS2 games rather than exclusive PS3 games, and I'm one of those. I mean, other than Little Big Planet, The only other PS3 game I'm playing is Soul Calibur 4, which is multi-platform, and the rest are either PS2 games or Blu-ray movies. And I got to say, I am watching a lot of Blu-ray movies recently. I'm finally using Netflix to its fullest extent. And actually, my PS3 is also my upscaling DVD player, so I'm not keeping the Earth green. If you remember, a couple of weeks ago, we had the article about keeping the Earth green and, you know, how we're harming the Earth by using too much power. And one of the things I say is don't use your game console as a DVD player, and I'm using it as a DVD player. It does great. Prowler 37 says the PS3 that upscales PS2 games is the only thing that makes playing those games bearable. And actually, I think that's the upscaling is actually the problem that's going on with some of these 60 gigabytes, is that when you're playing the PS2 games, that the emotion engine can't upscale correctly to whatever resolution, or can't upscale correctly over the HDMI port. So, but it's a software issue, and if that's happening to you, just wait for the next firmware update. It's going to fix itself. We are going to play a very old voicemail. This is a very old voicemail. This is me feeling guilty, because I received this voicemail, I want to say something like, actually, I got it here, September 27th. So this is pretty old. But I think it's actually, I'm going to rephrase the question after he's done. This is from Ghost World, one of our listeners from the UK. So he can't participate live because we're on at like 2 in the morning on a school night, work night, whatever. So, but he sent this voicemail quite a while ago. And it was actually about the holiday season. And it's actually going to be kind of neat to turn it over in our call segment. And we're going to kind of look in retrospect, rather than in his question, he's actually saying, what do you think is going to happen? Anyway, I'm going to play it. It's pretty long. So sit back, relax. Ghost World is going to be on here. And let's listen to what he has to say in his voicemail.
Hi, Bobby. This is Ghost World ringing in from the UK again. Just a quick question that maybe you, your listeners, and people in the chat room could answer. It's about this Christmas and the moon crush that we end up getting towards the end of the year, with too many games being released. An example I would give is, certainly within the UK, on the 24th of October, we have Fable 2, Far Cry, Dead Space being released, even Little Big Planet. The week after that, Fallout 3, followed by the week after that, Gears of War, and then Call of Duty World at War after that. It's just Mirror's Edge, Banjo-Kazooie. I mean, yes, you know, Cry Me a River, there's too many games I want to play, but there's obviously going to be sacrifices that we all have to make. For me, it's going to be Fallout 3 this year, because I can't really justify playing Fable 2 one week and then followed up by Fable 3, which is, or Fallout 3, which is, I guess, similar in style of RPG-like. I really wanted to play Dead Space, but with its positioning in that month, the same week as Little Big Planet, there's no real chance. And of course, you've got Katara thrown in that, and we've yet to get Lockdown 2, but let's hope. And I obviously, it's just surprising that game developers still believe, well, I guess maybe they're right to believe that all the money is to be made there, but it's just, it's a bit disheartening when you look at the forthcoming release schedule and go, are we going to have the time? And I think the answer to that is no. But for me, it's this year. I don't think I'm probably going to be playing Call of Duty World at War because of Gears of War 2 coming out. Dead Space, I think I'm going to have the bun back, and also Fallout 3, which is a real shame. But just wondering if you and your listeners have a certain title that you're really looking forward to, but it's falling in at the wrong place at the wrong time. Here's to playing them in February, I guess. Okay, thanks very much, and I'll speak to you soon.
Thank you very much, Ghost World. For those who probably wasn't able to understand, basically what he was saying is that there are so many titles that come out at the end of the year, because obviously the only time you can release a video game is in October and November. But there's so many titles. What title are you, and basically he was asking this in September, is what title are you going to pass on this holiday season and maybe get to later? And for him, the titles were Fallout 3, because it was so close after Fable 2, and Call of Duty World at War. And that's kind of what he said back in September is what his titles would that he was going to skip. It would be kind of interesting to hear from him now to hear what titles he would skip. But I guess my question is, and when we come back from our music break, I'll let people call in, what games that have come out did you wind up, that you were very excited for and wound up just not being able to play just due to time and the fact that you've already spent too much on games and stuff. And I know it's kind of hard to ask this question before Christmas because you never know what you got for a Christmas gift. But you know, what did you pass on that you maybe wish you didn't pass on, or one that you may want to go to later? And for me, the answer for me is Prince of Persia. I was very high. If you remember from E3, I was, you know, in love with Elika, and I tried to get her number, and the guy who created Elika wouldn't give me her number, and I still hold that against him. I really wanted to play Prince of Persia, and it has come out this month, and I just don't have the time to sit and play Prince of Persia. So I don't know if it's any good or not. I hope it is. But I don't know, because I kind of said, I'm going to wait on that one. I'm going to put it in my Gamefly queue and hope that it comes sometime in the next year. You know, like last year it was Assassin's Creed. I finally got to play it like a month ago. So that's kind of been my game that I really wanted to play that I didn't get a chance to. And so I would love to hear what yours were, what games you wanted to play that you just couldn't because too many games came out. So we're going to take a quick music break and we'll come back and take your calls about what games you you passed on and maybe what you're hoping to get if you do celebrate a holiday later this week. You're listening to the Bobby Blackwell Show on All Games Radio, online at allgames.com.
You're listening to the Bobby Blackwell Show.
Mortal Kombat on Sega Genesis. It's the best video game ever.
I disagree. It's a very good game, but I think Donkey Kong is the best game ever.
Donkey Kong sucks.
You know something? You suck.
On allgames.com.
I think I passed out on Mortal Kombat. That was the game I passed up on. Yeah, so that bumper was from KDog96. Nobody's leaving me bumpers. I beg for them on every show, and so I get to play the same KDog ones and Charles Martinet and all that stuff. I get to play them every week, and you get to hear them over and over. Bobby Blackwell's show on Skype. You can leave me a voicemail, or you can send me an MP3 if you want to leave something that says welcome back to the Bobby Blackwell show. So I am going to open up the phone lines and our Skype line, Bobby Blackwell show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156, if you want to call in and tell me what game you passed up on just because there were so many other games that you wanted to play. I do want to, somebody was just asking, is next week going to be our end of the year special? What up, G was asking that. And I still need to really hear from Kropotkin and Hendrix to make sure they're in. We may actually be starting a little bit earlier. We may actually start the show an hour earlier. You're going to have to go to allgames.com and check to see when we're starting so we can have the whole 2 hours. Because Orange Lounge Radio is still going to be on next week, so we don't want to bump them and anger their audience, because you really don't want to get the OL Army angered at you. So we may be starting early next week to do our year-end special. We do have a call here on the line, so I'm going to go ahead and take this. Bobby Blackwell show, you are on the air. Who is this?
This is that one European who is staying up late.
Yeah, thank you very much. You're always around, Ake Ripper. So what game have you skipped out on this year?
I didn't think of anything, but so I went for a quick search on the eminent Wikipedia, mm-hmm. and looked for what did I miss. And, well, what did I sort of miss, in a way? The second episode of Penny Arcade, Penny Arcade Adventures.
Right.
Sacred 2.
Yeah.
And, something else. I don't remember. But that was... it, I think.
So, I mean, were any of those you were really looking forward to, and then they just kind of slipped under the radar? Is that kind of what happened?
No, they were... nothing really slipped under the radar in a way. Since here's the thing, is that I was really sort of really hyped. The thing this year that I was really hyped about was Warhammer Online, of course. Mm-hmm. But...
you?
And the funny thing about that one is, well... I played it for like a few weeks, and then I went, meh, this is no fun.
Mm-hmm. And then you went back to WoW, is that what you're saying?
Well, I had a... the whole thing was that I was trying to cut down on online multiplayer games mm-hmm. at all.
Right.
But since, well, and how did I do that? Well, I began crocheting like a madman.
Okay.
And that's just how, that is how you solve things.
Yep. So is there anything else on your mind?
Nah. I'm back in WoW and playing on US server once again, so.
Okay. Excellent. Well, yeah, the Lich King is getting everybody nowadays, it seems.
But here's the other thing. I don't even have Lich King yet, mm-hmm. since I don't have a level 55 character on my US gotcha. Account.
Right.
When I stopped playing on my US account, which was like months before the first expansion came out, Burning Crusade, I only had like a 30,
right.
Level 40 character, so. Mm-hmm.
Oh. So that's what you missed out on. You missed out on Lich King. And you'll get to
yeah.
it later. All right.
I will play it in time.
All right. So. Thanks for your call, man. I appreciate it.
Later.
Bye.
Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156. You can call in and say what game you skipped out on because you just had way too many other games to play. Sully 907 is actually popping in MotorStorm Pacific Rift. That's another game I kind of skipped out on. I enjoyed the first MotorStorm, and it was the second, you know, and I was very happy that the second MotorStorm was going to have four-player split screen on the same TV, and I haven't gotten it yet. All right, so we do have another call here online, so I'm going to go ahead and grab this. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
This is X-Link.
Hey, X-Link. So what game have you missed out on?
You know what? Believe it or not, I still have the old PS2. I have not caught up to this whole Xbox 360 PS3 craze as of yet. Right. Unfortunately, because of my family and my job, I haven't had the chance to afford one until probably tax time this year.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to go for a game I missed this year would be Persona 4. Yep. I was really into Persona 3, which I still haven't played all the way through yet.
Right.
But it's been a really great game.
Yeah.
In fact, I still want to go back and beat Final Fantasy XII,
right.
which I still haven't played all the way through because it's like humongous. And I would say probably also Fallout 3 for the PC, which right. I'm hoping to play pretty soon here. So,
yeah, see, and actually Persona 4, that's another one I've kind of missed on because I didn't get into Persona 3 until after FES came out, and I haven't finished it yet. But
yeah, I have the first one, the mm-hmm. Persona original, still in box, everything,
wow.
and the same thing with Persona 2, which now they recently, Atlas decided to release onto, again, for sale onto Amazon.com.
Okay. So, yeah, but I mean, I skipped out, I haven't been able to get into Persona 4 yet, too many other games going on and stuff, and I mean, my PS3 does great on upscaling the PS2, so I have no problem playing PS2 games. And like you, I also haven't finished Final Fantasy XII because that came out, I think, right when the Xbox 360 came out, I think. Or maybe it was right before the PS3 came out.
I believe so.
I think it was right before the PS3 came out because I know that was the game I was playing in my PS3 the most when it first came out.
Let me ask you a quick question real quick. The PSP, do you think there's going to be any decent games? I know there's a few coming out next year, but by the way it looks like almost like it's going to go dead by the end of next year. I mean, and I heard a lot of people on certain boards complaining about the fact that they're releasing all these games, but it's like, oh, we released Castlevania Chronicles, but everybody's like, where's the Final Fantasies? Where's the old mm-hmm. PS1 game like Zendo Gears and all this, Square Enix kind of games, maybe Dragon Warrior, that type of stuff that really hit big with the PS1. None of the real big stuff has hit as of yet.
They're pushing the PSP really hard as a game system. I mean, they're trying to do all the marketing they can for it. I hope so. And, I mean, there's actually some people in our chat room that are huge PSP fans. A lot of the Japanese RPGs, though, are going towards the DS because the DS has a larger install base in Japan. And that's where you're seeing your Final Fantasies and your Dragon Quests and the Chrono Trigger. You know, Chrono Trigger came out on the DS. It didn't come out on the PSP recently. So it's... Sony needs to get up the install base, and then the third parties will start making games for them. But there are some, I haven't played them, unfortunately, but there are apparently some really good games that are on the PSP, and they look amazing. Apparently the God of War game is amazing.
Oh, I beat that one like in the second night after I got it. It was just absolutely amazing graphic-wise. Brave Story Traveler.
Yeah.
I played through that one, which is a really awesome role-playing game, too. If anybody out there has a PSP and they haven't played that one yet and they're into role-playing, like the Final Fantasies, that type of stuff, definitely pick that one up. I know it's going used right now for about like $20, so I mean, it's really good buy for the $20, so I mean...
Yeah, no, I mean, I hope so, because, I mean, you know, it's... I don't like having, like, a one-console market, and even in the handhelds, you know. The Game Boy always innovated because of the Game Gear and, you know, the Neo Geo and, you know, all the competitors to the market, and the competition fuels the industry. So
yeah.
I hope the PSP makes it.
I just hope it doesn't become, like, another Neo Geo cover where it's, oh, we're out for, like, 2-3 years, and now we're going to, you know, go to the wayside, you know. And I think they're just spending too much time marketing the console itself and not into the games. And I think they need to refocus on the games a little bit more so they can sell the consoles for the, you know, the PSP 3000 and stuff like that. So, I mean, overall, I've been having a lot of fun with it. I picked mine up over a year ago, and, I mean, I've been having a lot of fun. But now it's like, you know, you used to see 2 or 3 games every month. Now it's like, oh, well, the next game's not out till February, and then you have one in March.
Yeah.
And I mean, the only one other one PSP-wise I'm looking forward to is the Phantasy Star Portable, which is finally being released for over here in the U.S. So,
yeah, so, I mean, you know, I hope so. Because
I hope so, too.
Because I bought a PSP at launch. And
yeah.
I've very rarely played it. I mean, part of it's because I just don't play that many handheld games. I've rarely played my DS, but I've played my DS more often than my PSP.
Yeah.
And I think the reason that, for me, the reason I've played my DS more than the PSP is that the DS seems like it's made more, and like the games that I've been playing on are more games where I can pick it up, play it for 5 minutes, close it up, and just go.
Yeah.
And the PSP, because it's on the disc and there's nothing they can do about it, has like the load times. It takes some, maybe, you know, 3 or 4 minutes just to get into the part of the game where you need to be.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of the turn off a little bit.
Yeah, I know a lot of the PSP titles, too, depending on how popular they are going over to the PS2, too. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it whatsoever or not, so.
It also depends, you know, if the PSP store, because I know they recently put the PlayStation Network store on the PSP, that also helps load times because you know it's now on a solid state memory card and stuff. Because I do enjoy Beats,
yeah,
which was a download only title.
Yeah.
So you know it depends on if that picks up, and then you know also the PS2 games.
Well, just throwing things out there, and yeah. Also about last week, really quickly here about the parenting and not doing any kind of research. I have 2 stepchilds myself, one boy, one a girl, and I also do a lot of research before letting them play any kind of game, rather it be anything at all of my collection. Like, I have a Grand Theft Auto in my collection. I wouldn't even let them touch that. So, I mean, I noticed that there was that argument a couple of weeks back about do they do any kind of, do parents do any researches?
CPen15, you're wrong.
Anyway, yeah, I was kind of upset a couple of things he said, but I'm not going to get to it all tonight. I know we're running out of time, so I'll keep that for another night, but I appreciate you having me on the air and all that, so I'm going to let you go so you can take another call or two.
No,
so.
No problem. Thank you very much for calling in.
Thanks. No problem.
Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156. That was a real first-time caller. I like first-time callers. I like mixing it up. So Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, if you want to call in, 1-866-880-0156. You can tell me what game you missed out on because you just played way too many games and you bought way too many games this holiday season. Obviously, we now have somebody on the phone who's played so many games and he's bought so many games that he can't play them all. Bobby Blackwell Show, you're on the air. Who is this?
Hey, it's the guy who's wrong, Pen15.
Yeah, so you obviously play so many games and stuff. What game did you miss out on this holiday season?
Well, like I said last week, I'm actually the opposite.
I know. Yeah, that's why I'm...
Yeah. And by the way, I agreed that with what you said, so I was wrong, but then I said, yes, I was wrong. So.
All right. See, I like hearing you say that you're wrong. I think you should say it again.
Well, I'm just glad I got a clip of you saying I got high.
Yeah,
so.
You're wrong.
As far as games I missed GTA 4, and I had no plans on buying Far Cry 2 until I heard Sean Elliott speak about it, and that made me a lot more interested in the game.
Well, so, GTA 4 didn't even come out like this holiday season. It came out actually at a dead time.
I just didn't have money at the time. It was just a financial thing. So, well, actually, no, that's a lie. I did have the money, but I chose Ninja Gaiden 2 over that.
Right.
So I only had to pick one game at the time. And then I went ahead and bought Orange Box and Bioshock, which actually stopped me from buying GTA 4. So I probably won't get to GTA 4 till after the DLC comes out, assuming it comes out on time.
Now Hitstun brings up something in chat, and I didn't actually read this article. So are you aware that your name is a censored word in Pure?
No.
Pen 15 apparently is a censored word in Pure. They heard what you said about it. Yeah, well, your gamer tag's not Pen 15.
Well, that's because it won't let me.
Right.
I wanted it to be, and I tried every different variation. The only thing that it lets me do is literally write the words Pen and write out the word 15.
Mm-hmm.
But that just looks dumb.
Anything else on your mind?
Just that I actually like the fact that they're adding exclusive content to games, so that way reselling it is actually a lost value for people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think people should value their games more. Just kind of like I was saying, I personally, you know, play very few games because I prefer to spend a lot of time with one game, and I personally think that that's a better way to get higher quality games versus, you know, the one-off games that are sort of rentals that people actually go out and buy, which to me makes no sense, but, you know, people do with their money what they want.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I bashed on this game when it first came out, but I think Burnout Paradise is the best example of what a company should do in order to keep people playing their game with all the free DLC. You know, and I mean, I kind of bash it. I'm like, oh, it's not going to have longevity. I got bored with it after a week or two, which is correct. I did. But I'm glad I didn't sell it because every couple months they release some more stuff that bring me back into the game. And I've seen so many people in our community go back and repurchase Burnout Paradise. Granted, they get it used, but they go back out and they repurchase Burnout Paradise just to experience all the new stuff. So
now that they have them in the habit of downloading stuff for the game, they're most likely going to start purchasing stuff for the game just to keep it going.
Right, because they are releasing the new DLC is actually going to be paid content.
Yeah.
Which they haven't done yet.
Which is, I think that's a great strategy, getting people comfortable with getting stuff for free and then going, well, now you got to pay for this stuff and this stuff is way cooler.
But then there's also, you know, the stuff like, I think Gears of War did this and Rock Band 2 did this, where you get a code when you buy the game, and then when you redeem that code, you get the new stuff. But then when you sell the game and then somebody buys the game used, they don't get that. They can't redeem that code. Yeah, do you agree with that as well?
I mean, I agree. I agree with it on two levels. One, it forces people to make more high-quality games. And two, it hurts GameStop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is the shopping, you know, environment there is so terrible. Like, it's never a good experience going there. Mm-hmm. If you have a game crazy near you, go to that instead. Mm-hmm. I've been to about three different game crazies, and they're really nice people, and they're really friendly, and they make it real easy for you to do what you have to do. Like, a simple thing is they'll buff your disc for, like, I think $3 or $4 instead of, you know, forcing you to go, oh, just buy a used one. They actually will go, or you could just buff a disc and then try it again for a couple of bucks. And that actually worked for me with Ninja Gaiden, too, because I couldn't finish it.
And you know, I'm going to throw this in. If you're in the Roswell, Georgia area, you can go to CC Gaming over at ccgamingonline.com. They not only sell used games, but they also buff discs.
Yeah, and when I plan on visiting you one day, I plan on going to CC Gaming and picking up a copy of Killer Instinct for the SNES because they have a wide variety of products that they sell there.
Yes, and actually I do think they have Killer Instinct there.
And that's why I mentioned it, because, you know, your loyal caller, Ben 15, can't find one local.
Right. So, excellent. Well, we look forward to having you here, Stalker. I mean, Pen 15.
All right, great show, Bobby, and buy me Killer Instinct.
I'll think about it. Take care. So, Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156, if you want to call in. I'll take one more caller. We actually have a nice long call-in segment. Usually I kind of like scrunch it up to the end, but I actually have lots of time left to talk. People in our chat room are talking about the hardware and if there are things about hardware. Prowler 37 says, PS3 is good hardware, but hardware doesn't win console wars. Wiimotes and funny mascots named Mario do. And it's actually, I mean, if what's basically has been happening is that the most powerful console hasn't won in a while. You know, case in point, you know, last time the PS2, it was like the least powerful console of the three, and it dominated. So we do have another call here on the line, so I'm going to go ahead and take it. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
Mei Satsuma.
Mei Satsuma. So what is on your mind? What game did you What game did you miss out on? Because of too many games.
It has to be Street Fighter AC Remix, because I keep seeing invites from the lobby and like, I don't have any more money.
So yeah. I mean, those are especially the arcade games. A lot of people probably missed out on those because those release a whole lot, and then you've already spent $60 on games and can't spend the 10 or 15 more in imaginary points, space bucks.
I went overboard because the version Megastar down the street where I live going out of business, so I got like a few games for like $40.
Nice. So what else was on your mind?
Just wanted to point out that N15 was wrong again, that when it affect Game Crazy 2, if they can sell the used games with the new codes.
Where
he said, like, he was thinking on GameStop that, you know, if the game comes with a code, if you buy it used, it won't come with the code. He said that will only affect GameStop, but wouldn't affect Game Creepy too, since they sell used games.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, it affects all used shops. I mean, even, you know, Glenn from CC Gaming kind of was upset about that, because his line of reasoning, and when the new show Friday Night Gaming comes on, we will actually be talking about this with him. He's a collector, and this actually kind of hurts the collectors down the line. When people do in 10 years want to collect Xbox 360 games, they're not going to be able to get the whole game anymore. And so that's that's also who it hurts, is the gaming collectors, because I mean, I'm one of those people that, you know, I still play my NES. You know, I recently got my NES repaired, and I'm going through a whole bunch of NES games that I never played actually on the console, even though I know emulators exist and all that stuff. I'm playing them on the console. What's going to happen in 10 years when I want to play Burnout Paradise on an Xbox 360 that is probably a different one than the one I own now? What's going to happen? Am I going to be able to play all the new content?
It's more like the seventh one you won't have right now.
Yeah.
It was 5 years down the line.
Right.
Well, I'm going to let you close the show off.
Okay.
Have a good night.
Thanks for calling
I'll
in, man.
Have you close the show off.
Yep.
Hey, take care.
Take care. See, lots of callers tonight. It's been nice. But we are going to check in with the next show that's on. Coming up here on All Games Radio is Orange Lounge Radio. See, I didn't stumble on it this time. Orange Lounge Radio, a show out of Sacramento, California. They do a show much like ours, streaming here on All Games Radio right after us at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. OrangeLoungeRadio.com is where you can get their podcasts. And we usually check in with them, and we're actually calling them a little bit early, so they're probably like rushing, going, we didn't think Bobby was going to call us this early. And so they're probably rushing right now to get like mics on and headphones on, and I wish I could see the rushing that they do. So let's see if they've scrambled and gotten all their headphones and microphones on. Sacramento, are you guys there?
Yes, we're here, Bobby. How are you?
I'm doing good. I know I called you a little bit early.
No. Well, something weird happened because I get you know we listen to you here in studio before, you know, it's kind of going here in the studio before we go live, and we could hear you teasing our show, and we're kind of like, well, usually the call comes in by now.
Yeah.
So I think there might have been some type of Skype thingy going on. Not sure.
Probably.
So.
Yeah, because it was sitting here saying connecting until I finished my spiel, and then it finally said ringing.
Oh, strange.
It's weird.
Stupid Skype. Well, that's all right. What's up, Bobby? How's your holiday going?
It hasn't started yet. Unfortunately, I didn't get any time off.
Oh, no.
Work,
well,
so, yeah.
You and I are in the same boat then, but that's all right.
So what game did you miss because of so many games coming out in this holiday season?
Oh, my gosh. What game did I miss? Because there's some games I didn't finish that I started, certainly. I would say, like, Lost Odyssey was one of those games I started and just never finished because I got so distracted. Yeah. But something a little more recent, that Fallout 3. You know, you've heard so many like awesome things about Fallout 3 and, you know, Bethesda and Oblivion with guns and all this great stuff about Fallout 3.
Yeah.
And I just haven't had the chance, not at all.
And it's a long game too, so it's like you got to have a commitment to play.
Exactly. I mean, that's definitely in the February pile.
Yeah, I mean, that's the game that caused this problem, probably, is Fallout 3. And, you know, that's kind of why I haven't touched, like, Prince of Persia.
See, ironically, I have touched Prince of Persia, which is pretty good. I gave it a good review on last week's show.
And the prince liked it.
Is there anything, Loki, been any games you're putting off till February?
Well, Fallout 3 and Resistance 2, because Resistance 2, I played, like, the first level of it, and that's it.
I actually still need to get back into Order of Ecclesia, because I took a break because that one was hard, so I could go back and level. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, wait, I have finals.
And Prince of Persia and Left 4 Dead.
I did go back and play Little Big Planet, though, this week, after the recent patches.
And how is it? I haven't been able to get back into it.
I've been finding a lot of really creative user levels. A couple listeners sent me levels, and one of them was extremely creative. I was having a lot of fun with it. I couldn't beat it because it was too hard. I couldn't figure out one of his puzzles. But, yeah, I just need to go back with a clearer head at some point and do it. You know, sometimes you have to kind of walk away from a puzzle, come back later. I'm sure it's, like, something obvious I'm overlooking. But, you know, I think some of the user-created levels were definitely really starting to see some of the potential come out. And I think some of these new packs that are going to be coming out soon, like the Metal Gear Solid, the Holiday, you know, all those, is just going to really expand, I think, on what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, and I mean, I haven't been in. Is my level still there? Did they pull it because I've got my copyrighted logo in it?
As far as I know, it's still there, but I haven't checked it. I played it about three times, one right. Just to play it, and two to take the different pictures and try to get as high of a score as I could. And Bobby, I have to be honest, that's, I think, about the most I'm going to be able to play that level.
Yeah, it's not anything special.
Yeah, it's you know, it was a demo of sorts, and it did its purpose. And, you know, it was cool, though. Hey, I was able to get the All Games logo from it, and I put it in my pod. So it definitely has its use. If you're looking to get such copyrighted things, you can in Bobby's level.
Exactly. Well, so what are some of these levels? You know, can you pimp some of these levels, like who sent them to you that you really liked?
I think he emails you too, Rob with two B's.
Yeah, he hasn't emailed me his levels, but yeah, he does email me.
Well, he sent me a message on PSN. He has something, it's like a UFO theme level.
Okay.
And the whole thing's in black and white and has that like fog element going. It has that 50s sci-fi look to it that I thought was very cool, and little UFOs. It was pretty cool. That was the level I was talking about earlier. That I really liked.
Actually,
and
he did send me that. He did send me that on PSN because I'm on his PSN list as well. So I'll have to go check that out.
It's very creative. I enjoyed it. I wasn't able to beat it, but I enjoyed it a lot.
I have been able to download. I've like downloaded all the like each week I go in and download the costume.
Oh yeah, me too.
But I haven't gone in and actually seen how they look yet.
It's pretty cool. I like being able to mix and match them. Like I have a Santa Claus with fairy wings. It's pretty awesome. It's the Santa Fairy.
So what's going on Orange Sound Radio other than Santa Fairies?
you know, we're just covering the latest and not so greatest in gaming. I mean, my gosh, layoffs upon layoffs going on in the gaming industry this week. And we've kind of compiled them all together and going to be talking about over five studios doing some type of layoff this week. It's pretty crazy. And talking about the possible games that could be impacted. Also talking about some of the new stuff we have to look forward to in 2009. And some very strange ports going around out there, like a recent Xbox Live Arcade game getting a Nintendo Entertainment System fan port. Very interesting.
Now, okay, see, I know what you're talking about on that. Was that actually a port or just like a video made to look like it?
I think it's a concept thing. I don't think it's the real deal, but it's still somebody with too much free time on their hands.
Yes. Yeah. And to find out what we're talking about, orangeloungeradio.com.
You got it. Thanks so much, Bobby, and Merry Christmas.
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas.
And
I cut him off. I'm sorry. Oh, well. I cut Rob off. He's going to cut me off now from something. He'll cut me off later, like next week or something. So that's it for us this week. We will be back next week either at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, or 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We haven't decided yet. I need to get with Kropotkin and Hendricks. It's going to be our year-end review where we basically go month by month. We say this is what happened in January. And a lot of stuff happened in January that you probably forgot or were telltale signs of things that were to come, or sometimes we'll talk about things that companies said would happen that didn't. We had fun about that. That's with Kropotkin and Hendricks and maybe some other special guests. I don't know if Clicky the Pen's going to be here or not. So, but that may also start at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. That way we can go 2 hours and not hold up Orange Lounge Radio all that much, because they are still going to be going on at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. So you may get a little bit of early Black Wolf next week here on All Games Radio Online at allgames.com. Feel free to leave us a voicemail with us on any topic, and we'll play it in 4 months. Or you can leave us a bumper on our Skype line, Bobby Blackwolf Show. You can also email your thoughts and opinions to me at blackwolf@allgames.com, or you can join our forums at allgames.com, take part in our community. But we would not be able to make the live show work without the help of the chatters. Chrisville 1724, DC Nate, GK128, The Rob D, Burning Paper Sun, Bird, December Ween's Liar, Eswat, Funny Dale, Kitsune, Loserly, Maximilian, Octocamo, THK, Tigerclaw, Toshin, Actef, Bochikawa, Ake Ripper 3, Alt, Amaze Satsuma, Ash Fox, ATX, Bloodshot Robot, Cidabria, Crispy, Dark Tetsuya, DeBlue Guy, Decipher, Derek H, DJ Dark Knight, Dungeon Buster, Game Guru, Goldanthro, GS68, Hecht, Hitstun, Interlogic, Jillio, Joishi 16, JP the Prodigy, Justin Sane, Kazan, Kulex, Little Big Sully, Melted General, Misty, Necromoss, New Shiny CD, Nextil, Nick Ferg, Outrage, Pen 15, or Stalker, Prowler 37, Punchy, Shadow Next Gen, SSJ100 Matt, Subzi, TDB30, Tedekin, TM9FA, True, Visid, VXJasonXV, WhatUpG, Xenocore, Zappy, and DR4Ev. So that's it for us this week. Have a very good holiday if you are celebrating a holiday this weekend. And thanks for spending some time with us. It's been a great year. Thanks for supporting me over the year. And I'll see you. Support FNGlive.net.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed on tonight's broadcast are not necessarily the views and opinions of All Games Productions. This file may be freely distributed provided the original content is unedited and proper attribution is retained. For more information about All Games programming, go to www.allgames.com.